So this morning, we're going to be reading from the first canto, 12th chapter, Birth of Emperor Parikshit. Subject matter is the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira, and there's six verses that have been assigned. So we'll just read the, we'll chant together text number one, read the translations, and then come back and read the purport to text number four. So text number one, word meaning Shonaka Uvacha, the sage Shonaka said, Asvatthamna of Asvatthama, the son of Drona, Upasristena, by release of, Brahmasirshna, the invincible weapon, Brahmastra, invincible weapon Brahmastra, Uruteja, by high temperature, Uttaraya of Uttara, mother of Parikshit, Hata, being spoiled, Garba, womb, Ishena, by the Supreme Lord, Ajivita, brought to life, Puna, again. Shonaka Uvacha, Ashvatamno Prashristena, Brahma Shirshnu Uru Tejasa, Uttaraya Hato Garba, Ishena Jivata Puna, Shonaka Uvacha, Asvatthamno Prashishtena, Brahma Shirshnu Tejasa, Uttaraya Hato Garba, Ishena Jivita Puna. Asvatthamno Prashishtena, Brahma Shishno Rutejasa Uttaraya Hato Garba Ishena Jivata Unaha Shaunaka Uvacha Ashvatthamno Prashishtena Brahma Shishno Rutejasa Uttaraya Hato Garva Ishnaya Jivita Punaha Okay, I'll read the translations, and then we'll go back and we can get some help reading the purport to text number four. Translation, the sage Shonaka said, the womb of Uttara, mother of Parikshit, Maharaj Parikshit, was spoiled by the dreadful and invincible Brahmastra weapon released by Asvatthama. But Maharaj Parikshit was saved by the Lord, by the Supreme Lord. How was the great Emperor Parikshit, who was highly intelligent and a great devotee, born in that womb. How did his death take place? And what did he achieve after his death? We all respectfully want to hear about him, Maharaj Parikshit, to whom Shukadeva Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge. Please speak on this matter. Sri Suta Goswami said, Emperor Yudhisthira administered generously to everyone during his reign. He was exactly like his father. He had no personal ambition and was freed from all sorts of sense gratification because of his continuous service unto the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna. News even reached the celestial planets about Maharaj Yudhisthira's worldly possessions, the sacrifices by which he would attain a better destination, his queen, his stalwart brothers, his extensive land, his sovereignty over the planet Earth, and his fame, etc. O Brahmanas, the opulence of the king was so enchanting that the denizens of heaven aspired for it. But because he was absorbed in the service of the Lord, nothing could satisfy him except the Lord's service. So you want to start reading the purport to text number 4?
As mentioned in our introduction, there is a need for the science of Krishna in human society for all the suffering humanity of the world. And we simply request the leading personalities of all nations to take to the science of Krishna for their own good, for the good of society and for the good of all people of the world. So it is confirmed herein by the example of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the personality of goodness. In India, the people hanker after Rama Rajya because the personality of Godhead was the ideal king, and all other kings or emperors in India control the destiny of the world for the prosperity of every living being who took birth on the earth. Herein the word praja is significant. The etymological import of the word is that which is born. On the earth there are many species of life, from the aquatics up to the perfect human beings, and all are known as prajas.
But Brahma, the creator of this particular universe, is known as the Prajapati, because he is the grandfather of all who have taken birth. Thus, praja is used in a broader sense than it is now used. The king represents all living beings, the aquatics, plants, trees, reptiles, birds, animals, and man. Every one of them is a part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, Bhagavad Gita 14.4. And the king, being the representative of the Supreme Lord, is duty-bound to give proper protection to every one of them. This is not the case with the presidents and dictators of this demoralized system of administration, where the lower animals are given no protection, while the higher animals are given so-called protection. But this is a great science by which can be learned, which can be learned only by one who knows the science of Krishna.
By knowing the science of Krishna, one can become the most perfect man in the world. And unless one has knowledge in this science, all qualifications and doctorate diplomas acquired by academic education are spoiled and useless. Maharaj Yudhisthira knew this science of Krishna well, for it is stated here that by continuous cultivation of this science or by continuous devotional service to Lord Krishna, he acquired the qualification of administering the state. Father is sometimes seemingly cruel to the son, but that does not mean the father has lost the qualification to be a father. The father is always a father because he has the good of the son at heart. The father wants every one of his sons to become a better man than himself. Therefore, a king like Maharaj Yudhisthira, who is the personality of goodness, wanted everyone under his administration, especially human beings who have a better developed consciousness, to become devotees of Lord Krishna, so that everyone can become free from the trifles of material existence. His motto of administration was all good for the citizens, for as a personified goodness, he knew perfectly well what was actually good for them.
He conducted the administration on that principle, and not on the Rakshashi demonic principle of sense gratification. As an ideal king, He had no personal ambition, and there was no place for sense gratification, because all his senses at all times were engaged in the loving service of the Supreme Lord, which includes the partial service to the living beings who form the parts and partials of the complete whole. Those who are busy rendering service to the parts and partials, leaving aside the whole, only spoil time and energy, as one does when watering the leaves of a tree without watering the root. If water is poured on the root, the leaves are enlivened perfectly and automatically. But if water is poured on the leaves only, the whole energy is spoiled. Maharaj Yudhishthira, therefore, was constantly engaged in the service of the Lord. And thus the parts and parcels of the Lord, the living beings under his careful administration, were perfectly attended with all comforts in this life and all progress in the next. That is the way of perfect management of state administration.
Thank you. Om Agyana Tamaranda Shaganandjana Shalakaya Chaksurin Litam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So Maharaj Yudhishthira's reign is the topic here. And of all the verses that are described here, the six verses, I picked this purport because I thought it contained the essence of that topic, Maharaj Yudhishthira's reign. I belong to a group of devotees that are studying the Sri Ishupanishad, the Sri Upadeshamrita out in the Lachua. And one of the things that the devotees wanted to do was to take some practical application in their lives from the instructions that are written there, rather than just remaining on a theoretical platform. And so I thought we might take that same approach here today. I mean, here we have the description of Maharaj Yudhishthira's reign, and in one sense it's theoretical. It's on a page, it's theoretical there, but I thought we might do a little exercise to make it more practical for all of us today, so that we can get some idea and more experience of these principles. So today we're going to put all of you in charge of the government. It's going to be each of your reigns. Instead of Maharaj Yudhishthira's reign, it's going to be each one of your reigns. And we want to discuss what you're going to do. You have the reins of government now, so what are you going to do? What things do you change? What priorities do you make for government? And I have some examples from Srila Prabhupada's preaching about what his ideas were if he was put in charge of the government. So, three main areas: the form of government, crime, and the economy. So we're going to ask you for your positions on these things today. If you were put in charge of the government, what form of government would you choose to operate? I mean, I assume that you understand. I mean that this we're devotees. We're devotees of Krishna here. This is like, not just like a political science class or something like that. Well, there are different forms of government. There's democracy, monarchy, so many other things like that. So what form of government would a Krishna-conscious person such as you put? You want to use the microphone?
Very strict monarchy. I'll beat out all opposition.
Strict monarchy with beating all opposition. Gopal?
We're going to be really practical. There's something that Kalakanta brought up probably several years ago now, if we just had the government we had now and put a syntax on meat, that would increase revenue, it'd be good for the economy, it'd be good for the ecology. Hmm. So that's something practical that can be done. I mean, even something like that is outrageous. Which just speak of, just abolishing everything and establishing some kind of monarchy or something. Hmm. This is something, it's not all that unreasonable, but it'd be very difficult to implement just something like that. Hmm.
Okay, so that's interesting. I like that. keeping the form of government, you're saying, but taxing. So you'd keep taxation. You'd keep taxation as part of how your government operates. Interesting. Any other ideas? Yes?
I would keep the same kind of government as it is. However, I would be more strict in encouraging people to follow their religion. In other words, whatever religion they're following, to be more strict in following that.
Okay, so in this country we have separation of church and state, and so the government doesn't get involved in like preaching or pushing religion on people. You'd want to make that change in the government. Okay, now we did have a comment about monarchy and versus democracy. Now, we all know the famous statement Prabhupada said about democracy, right? Demon crazy. You want to elaborate on your monarchy over demon crazy?
I just wanted to say that it will be much easier and feasible to implement what I want to implement in a more strict state, and it will be more efficient to do that if I had a monarchy than if not.
Okay, so it would be easier to make people be religious or to tax them and everything like that if it was a monarchy. Okay, interesting. Anyone else have any other things they want to form? Well, there's these two forms. You have something you want to add? Yes.
I was thinking monarchy too, but then I was thinking it would be really important who's the monarch. Like, it's kind of scary nowadays if you have just any random person being a monarch.
Right, so there has to be some qualifications of the monarch, right? Are there any such qualified persons today? I mean, if you're going to establish a monarchy, then that's a very good point. So who's going to be that monarch? Chaitanya? Oh, okay. Oh.
I vote for Shesha Prabhu as king.
Actually, you know, there's these two forms, but there are different gradations of these things. And although Prabhupada said demon crazy, he didn't completely reject democracy either. I mean, he indicated, for instance, even in our temples, there could be election for a temple president or something like that. So there's some allowance there for expression of the people's choice in regard. Stephanie?
I would also keep democracy, but I would shift its basis, like from capitalism to something not so abusive to the whole earth, you know, like the humans and also the earth itself. So, like, I would shift from like capitalism and consumerism to something more sustainable, and also like put emphasis on things that are more important, like education instead of feeding our military, you know. Change to education, and that would benefit like the economy.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, we're going to talk about the economy in a minute, but let's stay on this leadership, Tulsi Pri.
I'm really confused. Can you explain if Prabhupada thought that there would actually be any resolve, if there's anything that devotees can do to really change the government? I guess my perspective is it's like it's Kali Yuga, and the government is so corrupted. That is there, even if we totally like overthrew the government and started something else, it would probably still be run by demons, like one way or other, like it just or influenced by demons, like, or even if we did have a president that was like really genuine and sincere, but still everyone around him is going to influence him in such a way to make poor decisions, and it seems like in Kali Yuga, I don't think there could actually be any solution to our bad government because there's just so much corruption. Mm-hmm. But what did Prabhupada really say about that?
Okay, very good, Tosarani. I appreciate that question because that leads into something that I want to share with you, which I think addresses those points. In 1975, Srila Prabhupada was traveling in America, and the devotees from India called him, and they said, "We've arranged a meeting for you with Indira Gandhi." so please come back to India immediately. And so Prabhupada changed his plan and immediately booked his ticket to go back to India to meet with Indira Gandhi. Now, democracy is a main form of government around the world today, or at least a major form of government around the world today. And which is the largest democracy? India is the largest democracy in the world. And so here was Prabhupada, pure devotee of Krishna, going to meet with the Prime Minister of India. And so as he was, as he got this news, he had a little notebook. It was a very small little notepad, like you keep phone numbers in before he had phones, you know. Everyone keeps a phone now, but they had these little books. And Prabhupada wrote in that little book 10 points for his meeting with Indira Gandhi. And I think they're very revealing about these subjects we're discussing. The first point was grant immigration for 500 foreigners. So the Krishna Conscious Movement was almost at its peak during Prabhupada's time in 75. And so many devotees joining, so much book distribution going on, such an impact the society was having. And Prabhupada wanted to bring his Western disciples to India so that that impact could be multiplied exponentially. And so this is the first point he was going to talk with Indira Gandhi about, grant immigration for 500 foreigners. Now, the second point has to do with maintaining democracy, but as some of you have suggested here, who is going to be those, who are the, those representatives going to be? So his point was that all MPs or members of parliament should be initiated brahmanas. That's who he felt should be the elective representatives, that they should be initiated brahmanas. If, why? Because they're going to be doing what? They're going to be advising. This is how, I think, and we'll see here in the next point why I'm saying that they'll be advising. Why don't we just read it now? He said that, and this is interesting, Sanjay the king, Indira queen mother. So you know who these people are, right? Sanjay Gandhi, her son, who later became prime minister of India. And Indira Gandhi is the queen mother. So he keeps parliament. It's almost like the British system, which is different than the American system of democracy. He keeps the parliament, but he has them as initiated brahmanas. And the quality of an initiated brahmana is, especially when we look at Prabhupada's instructions on somebody like Chanakya Pandit, he was a Brahmin that was advising the king. But he was living simply as a Brahmin. He didn't take money and salary from the king. He maintained his independence as a Brahmana so that he could give advice that wouldn't be colored by his own personal interest. In the verse we read today about personal ambition is one of the things that Maharaj Yudhisthira did not possess. He was simply interested in the benefit of the citizens. So this type of an brahmana, as Prabhupada's indicating here, and then Sanjay the king, Indira, queen, mother. Having this idea of the king or the head of government being like a father. Now, I think Prabhupada and the Vedic tradition itself is very strong on this idea of who's the qualified leader. Some of you mentioned qualified leader. So the qualified leader had to be someone who saw the praja as a father. And that comes out in the purport here today, that this feeling of a father that always has the best interest of the son in mind is something that we get from the idea of monarchy, which is completely different from the demoniac monarchy that we saw, you know, at the fall of monarchy, you know, several hundred years ago. I mean, before the rise of democracy, that's what there was, monarchy. And they became very, very corrupted by their positions. So a king, a monarchy where they have concern like parents for the citizens. So the next point that Prabhupada has on his list here is close slaughterhouses. Close slaughterhouses. He didn't. He felt that that was obviously something which was causing a lot of problems in society. And again, it reflects the verse we had here today. It's talking about all beings born in the kingdom were treated as sons or daughters, not just some. And so close slaughterhouses. Of course, since this time in India, the slaughter of animals in India has simply increased, even to the point where now in Vrindavan you have to be careful if you have cows because people come and rustle them, steal them at night, and take them to the slaughterhouse. That's the state of democracy in India today. Number five, chanting. He simply puts chanting. Now, other places Prabhupada talks about in the workplace how the workers should be trained is that they work in the factory, but then there are breaks every now and then, and they have like a kirtan. There's kirtan. So chanting, very much part of that. And so they're okay. Number six, meat eaters at home, no public meat eating. So, again, this is sort of a liberal kind of use of government. That, okay, you want to eat, so at home, but not in public. No public meat eating. Again, slaughterhouses meeting twice out of ten, he mentions this, so we understand the impact of the slaughter of animals on government and society. Number seven, prostitution punishable. I don't know if you remember last week we read about the prostitutes in Dwarka. There was a very liberal purport there, but now Prabhupada said prostitution punishable. Number eight, no religious group except followers of Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, he's talking about India. But India has a very sizable Muslim population, so that's still quite a radical statement. No religious group except followers of Bhagavad Gita. Number nine, all government officers must join kirtan at least twice a day. So if you have an administration of the government, and Prabhupada was very critical of government officials who simply line their own pockets and benefit personally from being in office, but Prabhupada said here they should join kirtan at least twice a day. And number 10, support Krishna consciousness all over the world. Actually, this number 10 came true just a few weeks ago. The Indian Parliament was considering this threat by a court in Russia about banning the Bhagavad Gita, and they went as far as proposals being made to make Bhagavad Gita like a national scripture or support or denounce the Russian government based on their denunciation of Bhagavad Gita. And so that type of support coming from India is was quite meaningful in that fight. I mean, the foreign ministers exchanged different things. It was quite a high level of the government. And so they were supporting Krishna consciousness in that way. So these are 10 things Prabhupada, you know, if you ask him, what would you do if you were in charge? Well, here they are. He's got a chance to meet with the Prime Minister of India, and he has these type of things to discuss about the form of government. Yes, Tosiran. How many were implemented? Well, certainly Sanjaya wasn't made the king and Indira the queen mother. Actually, I think what happened was is that at this time there were some death threats to Indira Gandhi, and it subdued Prabhupada's thing. In fact, there's a note here. It says, on August 22nd, 1975, Srila Prabhupada had an appointment with Indira Gandhi, and in a pocketbook he noted 10 points to present to her. Unfortunately, Mrs. Gandhi was disturbed by rumors of a threat to her life. Therefore, Prabhupada did not bring up his proposal. However, these notes are a testimony of Prabhupada's vision of Krishna consciousness in India. Okay, so these are some ideas about the form of government, but as I said, we wanted to cover three areas, so let's move to the next, which is crime. What would you do about crime in society? Gopal, then Chaitanya next.
Well, I know what Prabhupada said about that to, I think, a police officer in Chicago or whatever, that have public halls for distribution of free prasadam and kirtan.
Right, yes. Chaitanya?
If one, like if you're a criminal even in the, you know, stock market, that your hand gets cut off if you're stealing, you know. Go to the old way of, you know, stopping crime rather than, you know, there's no really, people will think, you know, I'm not going to do this, you know, rather than being so lenient, especially on the leaders, because like average people, they do things and they're put away for life for some things, whereas the people that are like, you know, in the CEOs of businesses, they're allowed to plunder everything and they get richer and they continue on, but there's no punishment. So like have a real punishment so people are afraid to do the wrong thing.
Okay, those are two things that Prabhupada said. Yes, Prabhupada was meeting with Lieutenant Mosey from the Chicago Police Department, as Gopal said, and he did talk about going back to the system that was present. I think at his time, he said even within 100 years, the king, the monarch in Kashmir used to exercise that. But that's something quite radical given our current civilization, that criminals would have their hands cut off and everything, right? Because we have cruel and unusual punishment. So Prabhupada said it, yes. Good.
Days continuously or something like that, so that they are purified.
Forcing them to chant.
Yeah, like for the extended time, just eat prasad and chant. That's all we do.
Well, there is indication in that conversation, and I'm going to read a little bit of it from Lieutenant Mosley's discussion with Prabhupada, that the reason why people commit crimes is because of a polluted heart. That's the position that Prabhupada took, that crime comes from a polluted heart. And if you're going to deal with crime, then you have to deal with the polluted heart, like that. And so, of course, there's fear also that Chaitanya is reminding us. But when criminals see the government as lenient, actually, I have a quote that talks about a discussion between a couple of the Mahajans. I think Pallad Maharaj is there and Bali Maharaj is there, and it discusses when a king should forgive and when he should use strength. And it makes the point that if the king always uses strength, that people become afraid. And that's not good for the citizens, just that fear permeating. He always uses. So therefore, sometimes one should not punish. One should be lenient so that one understands that there's some fairness going on here. But even that forgiveness, maybe once, maybe twice, but if you're too forgiving, then people take advantage. So it has to be some kind of balance between the strictness and the leniency. And I think obviously things have to be proportioned fairly across society.
And so they take up other means to get what they need economically. And so there's a not balanced. So everything is disbalanced. So that's why, like, economic situation, it affects the crime and, like, the environment. And then everything is, like, because of lack of God, Krishna consciousness. So that's the ultimate solution.
Right. I mean, this is a very important point. Prabhupada often criticized that when people are idle, the idle mind is the devil's workshop. And so when there's unemployment, it's actually harmful to the citizens because they can fall victim to, you know, engaging in nonsense activities or criminal activities or whatever because of lack of engagement. Everyone has to be engaged. Everyone should be engaged. And Prabhupada particularly criticized industry. When industry developed, what happened to jobs? The laborer jobs are replaced by machines, and that leaves the population without any engagement, and that's always a dangerous kind of situation to be. Yeah, so that's good, too. Let me read a little bit of Prabhupada's conversation with this police chief. Just give you some idea. Uh, the police lieutenant came to Prabhupada, and he was asking him to help in the efforts to prevent crime. And Prabhupada responded, "When people become purified of these dirty things, crime will disappear. The simplest process of purification is to assemble in congregation and chant the holy names of God. This is called Sankirtan and is the basis of our Krishna consciousness movement." Actually, Prabhupada was bold. There was a building in Evanston. And although this mentions Chicago, I think he was actually from Evanston, Illinois, not Chicago. And there was a building in Evanston. It was a big sort of institutional building that was just empty. And Prabhupada was saying to the man, "You should give us this building. You should give us this building, and we'll use this building to distribute prasad and to have this chanting of the holy name together." And obviously the man didn't take it very seriously, because Prabhupada mentions this right here in the beginning. He said the simplest. He says, "You should give us facility to do this." And then at the end of the conversation, the man says to him again, "Okay, well, let me come back to the original, you know, question about why I came here. How can you help us?" And Prabhupada responds that, "Well, I've already said how we can help you. Give us this building so we can chant and distribute prasadam. And that's how we'll help you." In other words, he took this viewpoint, which is, as we see in the purport here, Prabhupada's talking about watering the root and how watering the root satisfies the whole tree. And so Prabhupada is going to the root cause, is a dirty heart. And by chanting Hare Krishna, that will solve all the criminal problems. Now, if you were in charge of the government, I mean, the government's a big job. And there's so many aspects of it. And so unless you focus, as Maharaj Yudhisthira did, on the essence of a thing, on the essence, then you can easily get caught up in so many details of this little thing or that little thing. So Prabhupada stuck to that kind of principle in talking with this police lieutenant, that chanting the names of God purifies one. Actually, the lieutenant, he took a little swipe at India also. He said, "Well, you're talking about us so bad. What about India?" And Prabhupada said, yes, he admitted, yes, even though India has been so much into spiritual life for centuries, it's due to bad leadership that and these problems are arising in India also.
Just one story about purification by the chanting. One time some group, they didn't like us doing the Rath Yatra festival on the Venice Beach there, and they were protesting that. And they're arguing, they came up with different reasons against it. And they said, "Well, because there's all these people around for your festival, there would be more crime." And then somebody who was a leader in the police department actually said, "Actually, that day that they have their festival is the lightest day for us in terms of crime."
Right. It's because of the chanting of the holy name. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Just one point before we leave this on to the last point. Chaitanya was mentioning not just letting the corporate leaders get off when they do crime, and the common man, when he gets crime, gets slammed. And so this also came up in the discussion with Prabhupada and his lieutenant. Because the lieutenant says, "Would you start the program in an area of affluence or an area of poverty?" And Prabhupada responded, "We draw no such distinctions. Any place easily available for all kinds of men would be very suitable to hold Sankirtan. There is no restriction that only the poor men need to benefit and rich do not. Everyone needs to be purified. Do you think criminality exists only in the poorer section of society?" And the officer had to admit, no, that wasn't a fact. Yes.
In Srimad Bhagavatam, we have heard about many kings, and the one thing which is common to all of them is they do a lot of yajñas throughout the country. On the banks of rivers, so that common people's spirituality increases, and then it's become easy to implement all this law. So we can do Sankirtan again every town and village, officially have some in charge there.
Okay, good. Now the last area we wanted to touch on is the economy. That's obviously a big issue now in politics and always will be. Now, Stephanie was saying some things about the economy earlier. So what would you do in terms of the economy if you were a Krishna conscious leader in the world. Yes? Yes. Okay, high taxes, sin taxes, right? Yeah. Well, that's what they call them even today. I mean, the governments do that today. They call them sin taxes, like the taxes on cigarettes and on alcohol are very high right now. So that is a practice that's used even today. Chaitanya, you have something?
And it's not backed by anything, so they can keep printing money and it being worth less and less. So if we could get rid of the form of currency that we're using and go more toward something that's actually worth something, like either a gold standard or, you know, implement more of a bartering system rather than trading, you know, worthless pieces of paper that aren't backed by anything.
Mm-hmm. Actually, this is right on the point. I was speaking with Balavanta Prabhu a few weeks ago. He's a devotee in Alachua, and he's a lawyer. But he was running for mayor of Atlanta and very much instrumental in the In God We Trust party. That was a political party of devotees in the 70s. And he was mentioning to me that this idea about the gold standard and how Prabhupada was very upset when, I think, during the Nixon administration, they delinked the dollar from the actual gold standard. And so that to Prabhupada, according to Balavanta, that to Prabhupada was very serious, you know, has very serious consequences in terms of the economy. And so, yes, as you say, and I'm going to read some things about what Prabhupada said about the gold standard. So that's one thing about the economy that's very important. Anything else anyone has? Yes.
Not sure how I would do this, but it seems like it would be nice to have local, sustainable, like the food that's grown locally is feeding the people locally instead of carting it across the country. And that would, I don't know, I think that would make a big impact.
Very good. Yes, very good. That's the two things that stand out in Prabhupada's instructions, at least what I did here. And I don't want to say it's complete research. But the two things, the gold standard and this idea of a local economy, an agrarian-based local economy, are very, very important in terms of a Krishna-conscious economic system. Prabhupada makes that point very, very strongly. And again, I'll read some things there. So that's very good, yes, that local economy. Anything else? Gopal.
Same lines back to the meat tax. The government actually subsidizes the meat industry because it's not economical. So it would be like increasing revenue on two sides that way. And then of course, you know, grow more food. Grow more food. We have so much facility for growing food.
Actually, this is one of the major comments that condemnations that Prabhupada made of modern governments worldwide is that. He said there's plenty of land, but artificial scarcity is created because of the national borders, thinking that this is mine and that's yours. And so what happens is that the land is not used to grow food, and therefore certain parts of the world, they go hungry. There's famine in certain parts of the world, but it's not that there's inability to produce. There is great ability to produce, but because of mismanagement in terms of the government's handling of affairs, these things happen, like famine in different parts of the world like that. And so, and as you mentioned, subsidizing meat industry, paying farmers not to grow so the price remains artificially high. These are all things which are features of society which really move away, you know, from that type of a local, agrarian-based, self-supporting kind of an approach to an economic system. Let me just read some things that Prabhupada says, both about the gold standard and this idea of local economy. This is from a purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.17.39. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, even a gold standard exchange in currency is bad. Gold standard currency is based on falsehood because the currency is not on par with the reserve gold. The basic principle is falsity because currency notes are used in value beyond that of actually reserved gold. This artificial inflation of currency by the authority encourages prostitution of the state economy. The price of commodities becomes artificially inflated because of bad money or artificial currency notes. Bad money drives away good money. Instead of paper currency, actual gold coins should be used for exchange, and this will stop the prostitution of gold. This will discourage lust, envy, and enmity. When there is actually gold currency in the form of coins, the influence of gold in producing falsity, prostitution, etc. will automatically cease. There will be no need for an anti-corruption ministry for another term of prostitution and falsity of purpose. Prabhupada's so articulate. So all kinds of evil comes from the false currency idea that's there. And so an economy built on that, and we all know how an economy is important to a society. If it's not properly situated, then there's going to be trouble. As far as the type of economic system that's best, here's what Prabhupada says. He recommends the barter system. He recommends barter. You have got rice, I have got something else, so I give you something, you give me something. He recommends that kind of a barter arrangement for exchange in society. And then as far as simple living in farms is concerned, he says, if we concentrate in farm project, there will be no need of exchange because I'll be satisfied with my products. That's all. There is no need of exchange. Whatever I need, I get in my farm. So I haven't got to go outside for exchange. You are satisfied in your farm. I am satisfied. Then where is the question of exchange? There is no need of artificial. So this banking, everything will collapse automatically. There is no money. Who is going to keep money in the bank? Whatever it may be, we should be satisfied locally by our food, by our cloth, by our milk. That's all. Let the whole world go to hell. We don't care. If you want to save yourself also, you do this. Here is the example. If you want artificial life, city life, and hellish life, you do. But we shall live like this. This is ideal life. And so Prabhupada advocated, and you know he wanted farm communities started, particularly for the purpose of giving an alternative to the economic system that we have today. Of course, it's very difficult, as we've seen throughout the years, that many farms were purchased. But how many actually are existing as farms today? Practically none of them. Two things. Purity of heart is necessary. If we don't purify our own heart, a city boy's heart, then how's a city boy going to live in the country? He's going to be in the country, he's going to be thinking of the city. But if he purifies his heart and he's thinking of Krishna, then he can live anywhere, simply anywhere. And so it gets down to this idea of purity of heart, ultimately. If we're going to make this alternative economic system work, it's going to be also dependent on the purity of the heart so that we're satisfied and not hankering after other things. One last bonus topic is war. War is a big part of any government. So the purpose of war of a Krishna conscious leader is different than the purpose of war of a modern leader today. What's the purpose of war in the Vedic paradigm? Religious principles, yes. Protection of the citizens, yes. What about if you aggressively go and take an aggressive action in war? Is there justification for that in the Vedic system? if they're not following principles of God consciousness. I mean, this is indeed the purpose of the Mahabharata war and also in the Ramayana, isn't it? Demonic leaders being the need to replace them. But what characterizes a victory of a Krishna conscious leader in war? In the Ramayana, we see that Lord Ram did not take the seat of the king of Lanka, but he put Bibhishan on the throne. So it wasn't personal ambition. A lot of Maharaj Yudhisthira's reign is described in the Purport as lacking personal ambition. It wasn't personal ambition. So when Ram conquered Lanka, rid the world of Ravana, he put Bibhishan on the throne. He didn't take it for himself. He wasn't conquering for his egoistic, on an egoistic conquest. It wasn't an economic conquest. Similarly, in the Mahabharata, Krishna wanted to establish Yudhisthira. Because it's not enough just to have good government. What was wrong with Duryodhana's reign? Was there anything wrong? He was reigning quite well, taking care of the kingdom quite well. Yes, he was wrong because he had a polluted heart. He had dirty things in his heart. And that's not the position of a leader. A leader cannot be godless, has to be a godly king. And just because of that reason, which was more important, think of how many people were killed in a battle of Kurukshetra. Millions of people were killed. What for? Not for economic gain, not for egoistic conquest, but simply because it's so important to have a God-conscious leader. It's so important to have a God-conscious leader that so many people and such upheaval can take place in society just for that goal, because by that goal alone, everything else will be satisfied, just like watering the root of a tree satisfies the whole tree. So any questions anyone has or comments about these subject matters? Yes, please.
I just have a comment. The problem with Kali Yuga is that all the evils are intertwined, because Kali Yuga is convoluted.
Mm.
So really, unentangle one particular evil is not really that easy.
Right. That's true. Therefore, go to the root of them, rather than just trying to solve one particular problem. I think that's a good point. Yes?
I'm not sure if I have this correct, but I think Srila Prabhupada said that the success of the Krishna consciousness movement will be shown one day when there's a Supreme Court judge wearing tilak and neckties.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said that. Yeah, he said that. Who do we want? Who do we want to trust making the judgments on very important issues like that, a devotee? And so when society accepts that, then we'll know we've made some progress in life. Thank you. Anything else anyone has? Subject matter? Yes?
I'm just thinking about the sort of the government structure of the farm communities that we've tried to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a very good observation on your part. Obviously, there's been some organizational element or purity of the heart elements, these elements that prevent them from developing the way Prabhupada envisioned, and I think that may be one of them. So I think that should be entered into the debate about how to develop farm communities. Prabhupada basically talked about Varnashram. Now, Varnashram doesn't exclude personal ownership, as far as I know. I haven't delved into the subject very extensively, so I couldn't answer your question more than this. But I think that there are publications where Prabhupada's instructions are present, and then there's discussion of those among devotees and so on. But I think that's an interesting element that should be added to the conversation. How does personal ownership, because Prabhupada said, the one thing he did say about personal ownership is that propriety turns sand into gold. So when there's ownership, then there's more development that takes place. Yes? Well, I think that question came up, and the response was, whether it came directly from Prabhupada or in discussion about the gold standard among devotees, is that gold has some intrinsic value itself. I mean, it is a valuable metal in that there are properties in gold that are sort of health-related, something that gives it some intrinsic value, as opposed to, like, as you say, being just like paper money, because we think it has value, therefore it becomes valuable. No, but it has some value intrinsic to it. That's all I could say in response to that. Do you have something on that, Chaitanya? Yeah. Well, in that quote I read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada also criticizes the gold standard in that it also has some arbitrariness to it, which is what Amrita Kaili is talking about, the arbitrariness of the value of gold. So I can't say more specifically about that, but I think that there is some solid intrinsic value to gold, and that's why it's chosen as a standard. Right. Good point. Right. Right. Print more. You print more, right, exactly.